Welcome to yet another episode of Method in Madness, and today I have my friend Alexander Payton. Alexander is the co-founder of Certain and Global, a company dedicated to providing assessment and certification solutions that empowers certification programs to grow. I have known him for quite some time. First time I met him was I saw him live speaking at a conference in Athens, and I was blown away by his skills and the ability to connect with his audience through his beautiful story. So I'm very excited to have him, someone whose entrepreneurship journey is actually slightly unconventional from the people I've spoken so far. So I'm very excited to hear his method, his madness, and share the story with all of you. Please help me welcome one of the finest speakers, finest people, and an amazing entrepreneur, Alexander.
This is Method in Madness.
Welcome to Method in Madness, Alexander. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. It's sunny outside, so I'm super happy.
I hope when the podcast is out, it's also a sunny day. But there is always that question mark in this time of the year.
Especially in these countries, right?
Exactly, exactly. Well, we have known each other for many years. I've seen you speak on big stage in Toastmaster conferences. And I remember thinking, what an amazing speaker. I still remember your speech in Athens.
Thank you.
And I recently also, through LinkedIn, I noticed that you have made a shift to entrepreneurship, and you have co-founded a Certain Global. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Certain.global.
Certain.global. So can you tell me what is it about, and what's that moment when you felt like, yes, entrepreneurship is my call, and this is the area I want to be in?
Okay, so maybe let's talk a little bit about Certain itself.
Yes.
So Certain is a software and services organization. We specialize in providing personal assessments through online exams and certification.
Okay.
So we do that for lots of professional certification programs. We never own the actual program ourselves, but we are an external evaluator of the knowledge of individuals. So for example, for project management certification programs, IP owners of those come to us to organize the exams and to conduct those exams everywhere in the world. How did we start with that? That's a good question.
When did you start? Let's start with that.
When? Oh, I can't remember even. It must be 5 years ago or something like that. Four
Wow.
5 years. I don't remember. It was right before COVID happened.
Yeah.
Which was great because we specialize in remote exams. So everything is done online, online proctored as well. And right before COVID, when we were starting out, we were always making the argument of why it's okay to do online exams or remote proctored exams. But well, that was a little bit of a challenge. And then COVID happened, and suddenly that was a non-topic. And after
Online
that,
became the new cool thing, right?
Exactly. We never had any discussions about online exams or remote proctoring again after that. So voilà. The question was, when did I get, or how did I get into founding Certain?
What was the moment when you thought, okay, entrepreneurship is where I want to go, and this is the work that appeals to me the most?
So that's a good question. I think I was lucky because when I started my career, I immediately started in a startup. Back then we were three people and I was there as an employee, and we did very well. And I was managing the operation and the product. And because I was one of the first, I immediately took on quite some responsibility. The company was a huge success. And after a while, I felt, okay, this is what I want to do, but I want to be in, like, I want to have ownership of it. And I learned a lot during that time, but after a while, it felt like, okay, I want to be, I want more. And that
ready to
the
fly on
opportunity.
my own.
Exactly. And then the opportunity came along and I took it.
Nice. And one of the things, in my experience working in innovation and product development, I'm also sometimes often struggling with it as an entrepreneur, is the scaling. You know, getting the first few customers is not always hard because, you know, friends, families, people you know you will want to work with you. But then the question is scaling. Now, you've been an entrepreneur for 5 years, so I'm sure that is a topic that you have to a large extent overcome and conquered rather. So was scaling also a challenge for you, and or is it still a challenge, and how do you cope with that?
I think scaling is in every startup or scale up a challenge. If not, then wow. But yeah, I think for us, first of all, the issue was diversifying our clients' portfolio. So we have a few big clients with whom we do a lot of business, but and that's great. So we love working with them. But if you have all your eggs in one basket, it's a bit risky. So we really have to invest more and still do today in diversifying our clients' portfolio, and in trying to make sure that our business model stays aligned with what we originally have in mind, because new clients often means new feature requests or new service requests. And of course, it's easy to always say yes, and that brings you money immediately, but it might cost you quite a lot in the future because you have to keep all products in the air and customizing for all different clients. So I think that's our main challenge, diversifying client portfolio while keeping our core business straight. Yeah.
I remember I attended a talk that spoke about, in a different context, the business model of Uber versus Booking.com, where Uber, whenever they go to a new market, they customize their product based on that market. Has the mobile phone available, how technology advancement is there, what services can this market need, and they really tailor it to them. Whereas Booking is more like, this is a standard product, this is what we give, and we give it to everybody. And both work, but they both have challenges. And I think what you just said about customer wanting a new feature, and it's so easy to say yes because you know it's quick money, but it costs in the long term, and that's something we nobody really we don't have pockets like Uber, and yeah, it's really a tough thing to decide on,
It's
right?
always a balance, because it's finding a balance between the two business models. You do
Sure.
want to tailor, you want to add features, but you don't want to overdo it. You want to do it in a smart way that is scalable, and that's sometimes an issue. Sometimes it goes right, sometimes wrong. That's part of it.
You learn it on the job, I guess, right? It's one of those things. And now I think technology is playing such an important role, especially in the area of project management. How do you see that evolve, the future of project management, especially with all the technological advancements with ChatGPT? I mean, that's like kind of the most the dominant whenever these days. Whenever somebody thinks of technology advancement, that's the first thing that's we're reminded of. Where do you see? How do you see it evolve, project management?
I'm not a specialist project manager myself. We work with lots of project managers, and we have quite some clients in the project management certifications. So I know a little bit, and if you would ask me the future about project management, well, it's always an opinion that I've heard from experts talking about the topic, but I kind of share it. It's a controversial one. So lots of people say AI is the future of project manager and it will completely disrupt project management. I'll take the unpopular opinion. I don't agree.
I was going to think that way, but if you were
I'm
answering,
sorry.
that's what you're going to say.
I don't agree. I think it will make it easier, it
Yeah.
will make it faster, but at the core, project management is a people business and it's a craft. And you cannot give a craft to an AI or a generative AI or any other AI system. So while it may help you to do some planning and some administration, it won't replace it. So, what is the future of project management? I think the focus will be more on people management, And you can only excel if you master like the craft of project management. But we'll have to be careful because a lot of imitation project managers will get a little bit further because AI might help them in some administration and planning.
Of course, I actually took a note of that you can't give craft to AI. I think that was really profound what you just said, because from a distance, everybody who's not involved with project management think it's just boring Excel sheets and just doing thousands of meetings. And yes, though there are admin things that can be easily automated, but the people dynamic to that is often not
Yeah.
underlined strongly, because I think that's what is making people do things, making people change.
Exactly. So what people typically confuse when they see work is that they see the actual output. So they see an Excel sheet, or they see work breakdown structure, or deliverables map, or something like that. And that is the output of the work. But the way to that is the actual work of a project manager. And therefore, I think, for example, facilitation is one of the key skills of a project manager. It is getting the right information from the right people. That is the difficult part. And an AI is not, as far as I know, I'm not an expert in AI, of course, but is not really able to identify the right people in the organization, ask them the right questions, facilitate and brainstorm a meeting very well. So no, I think AI might speed up some administration and planning, but in essence it won't replace a project manager.
And I think what you just said, facilitation, and that I do that a lot. And I think one thing I do notice is it requires a lot of intuition, a lot of intuitive thinking.
Absolutely.
You really read the room, and you have to feel the energy. And I don't think we're there yet. Maybe in our lifetime we'll see a machine who can actually do all of that. Right now they're limited to movies and horror movies where the machine suddenly develops emotion, but in reality. Yeah, I think it's a wait and watch, but I don't think we're there yet. So I think really strongly agree with what you just said. And you've also been spreading your word, right? I also saw that you were in Riyadh in the Global Project Management Forum, and you're going to be there again this year to deliver your talk.
Correct.
Maybe you want to maybe give us a little sneak peek what you're going to talk about.
So yeah, the Global Project Management Forum is, I think, the biggest project management event in the Middle East. About 13,000 people attend, and I've been there for the first time last year in Riyadh. It's a really, really well organized and nice event with people all over the world flying in. So it's a great time to meet colleagues and friends. And it's also really interesting because if you have lots of different tracks. This year you have a focus on people, on technology, and on processes. And I'm invited to participate in a panel talking about people in the people track. And we'll talk about the value of certification in project management for this conference. And I think that is key because certification, especially in Europe, sometimes has a little bit of a negative sound to it, because over the years certification has been exploited commercially quite a bit. So pay to renew your certification, or over certifying certain knowledge, or trying to certify it through multiple choice questions of knowledge that is really not certifiable through multiple choice questions. So what I want to bring in discussion is a step back and look at the science behind, or the behavioral science behind, certification. What is the actual issue we try to solve? And that is, in this case, information asymmetry. And that's behavioral economics. That's very simple. It's if you are in the market for a secondhand car, and you have secondhand cars that are great and secondhand cars that will break down in 2 minutes, the seller knows what he's selling, but the buyer doesn't. And you want to solve that issue. The only way to solve that is to have an independent party certifying or guaranteeing the quality. And that is exactly what we are going to do here. And the certification in this case serves as a signal function. It signals to the market, okay, this car or this person has the skills and capabilities required. And so I'll investigate the information asymmetry issue and the signal function theory a little bit more in that, because I think with certain that is the core of our business. We are there as external parties to assess the knowledge of an individual. And if the syllabus that we need to assess is not, we are not able to do that, then we will refuse the client. And then we're very adamant about that. Like, we will not use our name to certify people when we are not sure we can through our services. And in that way, I hope we can change the market a little bit and get a
That's
positive image
amazing.
again for certification.
Wow. So I have two more questions for you. One, now you touch behavioral science, you touch behavioral economics, you touch human factor, and when I put all of this in together, the first word that comes to my mind is change, and a word that's dreaded, loved, hated, everything. It's like so let's imagine you get hired as a change manager of a large bureaucratic organization that hasn't undergone change in a long time. People resist change. People just love the status quo. They love doing what they always do. And you're hired to bring fresh perspective, fresh idea, fresh way of working with the existing group of people. What's the first change you will introduce so that these people, this group of people, do not hate change, and more importantly, they don't hate you? Well, if that's important, they embrace the change.
Well, it's not that important if people like you or not in the room,
That's true.
but it's important that they respect what you do.
100.
If you want people to, I mean, love change, I mean, be difficult, but to accept change, the first thing you need to start with, what I would start with, is create a common understanding of why the change is needed. People might disagree, but at least they understand why. And it's, in my experience, a lot easier to ask people to do something if they understand why they need to do something. For example, in our support team, we have certain administrative documents the support team needs to fill out. If you give them those, when we introduce those documents, and we just say you have to fill them out, they're not really happy to spend their time to do that, because they don't see the point. They've just been asked to do that. It has worked before for them as well. But if you explain that, okay, this is needed so we can track KPIs and it's important for customer satisfaction, and give the whole reasoning behind that, it's a lot easier for them to accept that what they're doing is, or that what the change is important. And even a step further is they can give counter arguments. And again, you don't have to agree with them ultimately. If you want to make a change, you're going to have to make it. But at least you can learn from what their input, and they understand why it's needed. So I think in conclusion, what I think is important for change management is making sure all the stakeholders understand why the change is needed.
Nice. Well, let me ask one last light-hearted question, because this podcast is called Method in Madness, and I'd like to know what's been your moment of madness in your life, something you've done, and today you look back and think like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Thank God I did it, but not
I
sure if
think
I'll do it again, but thank God I did it. What's been
oh
that
no, I
moment of
think I
madness?
yeah, good. Oh, interesting question. So I think for me it's definitely leaving the startup I was in. Because we were doing very, very, very well at the moment I left, and things were really going like we were one of the seven fastest growing technology companies in Belgium. And we really had things going for us. We were hiring new people. But at that time, I decided to leave and start Certain, which was basically taking a huge risk because it was a well-paid job, obviously. There was options included, and I was really friends with whom I was working. So then to step away and to say no, I will start on my own and try to build something for myself is was a huge leap in the unknown and a huge leap in the uncertainty. But looking back at it, I would immediately do it again because for me, the way I work now is there is the line between work and private life is very blurry, and that's what I absolutely love. So if I have an hour or two during the day of a work week, I don't feel any pressure and I can go out for a walk, do some sports, work with the horses. But the other way around, I don't mind at all to work in the weekend or in the evening when I'm working on something that I care about or I'm talking to clients in the weekend. So I like that blurry line, and that's not something I had in my previous work. So looking back at it, I would immediately do it again.
Well, I always end my podcast with one line that says, there is no magic without a little madness. We always need that little dose of madness to take leap in the unknown, to trust our instincts and gut feeling and follow our heart. Because if we don't do that, we are stuck in mundane jobs, mundane life with good ideas that do not see light of the day. So I am very happy that you took that leap of faith, and I can only see amazing things coming your way. I wish you more methods, more madness, more successes, more stages, more certifications, and making a very positive impact in not just Belgium but across Europe. Thank you
Super.
so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
And that was yet another episode of Method in Madness. In few weeks, I will be back with yet another episode with more methods, more madness. Till then, stay mad, because there is no magic without that little touch of madness.